Okay, we'll go straight back to our conversation now with Dr. Joe Kelly. Joe, thanks for that. Right, okay, so what I put to you before the news there is that there seems to be no middle ground anymore. There seems to be no space whereby we come up with some sort of a public consensus where you give me a bit, I give you a bit. Have you anything to say about that? Do you recognise that that's the case, or do you see it some way different?
I think that's, you're hitting the nail on the head. That's where the crisis of politics is. Our politicians have masterly put us into extremes, what they determine as extremes, liberal or left or right or whatever. And this is the labelling. You see, once you start labelling people, then the conversation is gone. You move from conversation to confrontation. And I'll just give you an example as a teacher. When I walk into my classroom every year and I get new students, right, I have a sign up on my wall, a big poster up on the wall, Einstein's. And it says, if you judge a fish by its ability to climb a tree, it'll go round all its life thinking it's stupid. And I tell my children, some of you in here are not meant to climb the tree off the curriculum that I will teach because you are a fish. You are meant to swim in the sea. And if I were to label them and say, oh, you're stupid, so therefore I'm not going to work with you for the next 6 years, my job is not to label the student. My job is to try to understand and listen to the student and work with that student. And what I discover 99.9999% of the time is that that student in front of me may be a fish and a wonderful fish at that, that's never meant to climb that tree of what I might be teaching. There are other people that will climb that tree, no problems. So back to the politics. If we label people, and this is what's happening left and right, at the centre, and I don't think there's anybody liberal or conservative or in any spectrum of politics that doesn't want a better future for their children, that doesn't want better health services, that doesn't want a better community, doesn't want better security and safety and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. We all agree on that and we're all in the centre in that. And this is where we need to be. And unfortunately, and this is the danger, Greg, politicians will bring us to an extreme. They'll jump on one side knowing that if I get enough of one side, I'll get elected. And the other go, well, if I get enough on the other side, I'll get elected. What we need is someone that can build consensus, somebody that can stay in the middle and see the goodness that's in everybody, no matter what political orientation, view, direction they have. Mm. Because I fundamentally believe that at the heart of every human being are the same wants and desires as any other human being.
Is it possible, though, that people, the people that do speak out don't articulate their language very well, in that you can have lots of issues are grouped in? Okay, so you might have people that are conservative on certain issues and then have certain issues, views about the climate, for an example, about gender, about abortion, and the list goes on. And then what happens is they're all, you know, you can't have a nuanced conversation because the views are so sort of right across the board. And I might agree with them in certain things, but not in others. And I don't want them really governing me because I don't really like the world that they're trying to create if they had the power.
That's very well put. An example is the last abortion referendum. And I don't want to get into the debate of it. You had 1.2 million, I think, voting yes. And you had 800,000 voting no. And those 800,000 were just ignored, abandoned. Not all political parties, almost, I think one or two didn't, turned their backs on them and said, you know what, your view isn't important anymore. That's a wrong kind of
That was a vote, though. That's a referendum. No.
Yeah, but a lot of people felt abandoned and put down.
But you want to protect democracy, but then you question the democratic vote.
No, I'm not questioning a democratic vote. You're missing my point. What I'm saying is those 800,000 people had a view that is worth respecting in the same way as the 1.2 million had a view that is worth respecting.
Well, I hope their view is respected.
It shouldn't just be about majority, because when we come, for example, to LGBT matters, it's not about majority. It's about what's right and where the balance is, and you build consensus. And unfortunately, you've said this, you know, we're building on extremes rather than finding the centre ground. And if you think of the likes of Gandhi, if you think of the likes of Martin Luther King, people like that, they built consensus. They brought people together from different views in their time. And unfortunately, we do not have that in politics at the moment. I think it's going to be very interesting come the next Dáil election in Donegal. I mean, is it possible? Is it unfathomable? And I don't think it is. that we will have no government, present government TD back the next time in the Dáil? Is it possible that the government party, that the constitutional party of the country, Fianna Fáil, might not have a TD representing Donegal the next? Because I think there's a constitutional crisis going on. People know something's wrong. It's like, you know, a corpse, and you can put makeup on them and you can put perfume on them, but the smell will eventually come out of that corpse. And at the I think at the moment the problem is we have crisis after crisis, but people need to really take heed of the smell.
I don't know. I think, like, I mean, you could well be right, but I think there are, I think it's broader now than it used to be. I think there are 20% of people with extreme views. I don't even like that word, in one direction and 20 in the other. I still believe there's a 60% in the middle that are perhaps almost apathetic at this point, that just want to get on with their life and to be able to live a happy life, and for people to be treated fairly, and don't want to engage in these sort of these extremes of conversation. Sinead is joining the conversation now. Sinead, I mean, is anything that Joe's saying resonating with you? Do you agree with anything he's saying?
Hi, Greg. Thanks for asking me on. Not a lot, to be perfectly honest with you, Greg. I mean, and a lot of what Joe is saying is very contradictory, to say the least. I mean, to say that our politicians are politicians in Ireland, jump on extremes and we'll just go with extremes, is when we have possibly the most conservative government or centrist government throughout the entire EU, is just unbelievable to me. I mean, I don't understand where he's coming from. I don't understand why there's opposition to the hate speech bill. I don't understand why all of a sudden you're talking about a constitutional crisis, but then you won't respect the, or you choose not to, it shouldn't be about the majority, apparently, when it comes to a vote on a constitutional issue. I mean, it's just...
But he rejected that. I mean, that was a point I made, and he rejected that, and he's well able to defend himself. So we have a centralist government, one of the most centralist governments in Europe, Joe. Stay where you are, Sinead.
Sure. I mean, she's contradicting herself. That's making my point. The fact that we are being so centralised by government and regulated by government makes my point. That's the point I'm making, and you're agreeing. Thank you for making the point for me. We are so...
No, regulated. I didn't say centralised.
Centrist,
I said centre.
Yeah.
Centrist. So there's a very different, big difference between centralised and centrist. And a centrist government or centrist politicians, by their very nature, don't have a tendency to jump on extremes, Jill.
Well, I disagree with you on the centrist point of view exactly. What do you mean by centrist? And again, if you look at all the various concerns that people are having that aren't being addressed. So just for example, Niall Collins and his expenses, he's refusing to explain his expenses, the 9,000 miles as opposed to, and his expense, he's refusing to explain that. We have Helen McEntee.
That's got nothing to do with centrism. Absolutely nothing.
You have Helen McEntee that goes into a court in camera, we don't know the judge, and asks, without authority from the Dáil, that all her mobile phones and calls and records are kept for a year.
I mean, did you have any concerns with that, Sinead?
Massively so. But that has absolutely nothing to do with politicians being centrist in any way, shape or form.
Do you have any concerns, Sinead?
What they do tend to do is sort of centrist right, which is exactly the point that Joe is making. Joe seems to be from a very much a right-wing point of view. And we love you talking to him, no, he's not. But all his talking points are very much right-wing.
Well, no, he might say
right.
He might say you're making his point by labelling him, you see, by simply speaking out and questioning the direction of traffic in this country, labelling him extreme right or far right.
I didn't say extreme right or far right. I said centre right, right. I didn't say extreme or far.
Right, okay. Well, the connotation's there. But anyway, Joe, I'll bring you back in a second. So, Sinead, are you not in any way concerned about the hate speech legislation and the level of scrutiny of it, and really the lack of understanding as to, you know, what it actually will control, how it can be interpreted and enforced? Have you no concerns at all in this whole process as to how the hate speech has... I mean, we hope it is the case, right, where it means that, you know, marginalised groups or individuals can't be abused, you know, they can't be harangued, that they are protected. That might happen, but there could be collateral damage as well. Are you not in any way concerned that it is not being properly scrutinised like the same kind of scrutiny we were looking for the defective concrete legislation, for an example?
So, I mean, I don't know that it hasn't been scrutinised to that level. I don't know if it's just the fact that it's gone through a little bit quicker. But, I mean, in terms of the scrutiny, look, ideally you would want every single law that is to be passed, every single act to be passed, to be fully scrutinised by everybody. In an ideal world, of course you would. Only a fool would think otherwise. But, I mean, I'm not concerned by the proposal that's in the hate speech law that I can see. My only question would be how it is going to, in fact, be enforced. That's and whether or not that will be enforced, and whether or not that who's going to enforce it. And I mean, they're crying out about the lack of guardies,
but Sinead, so the point is, as you see, so then some people who have concerns about the hate speech law, all of a sudden they're being labelled as homophobic or transphobic or racist because they have concerns about how far-reaching this hate speech may be and limit debate and conversation. And with respect, Sinead, you sound like you might have similar concerns yourself. So I think that's what Joe's talking to. In the democracy we have now, even though we might agree, it seems we can't really comfortably have the conversation.
I know, and I don't, Greg, I don't have any concerns with what I can see in the hate speech law at all as being proposed at all. And it actually is, in fact, you know, you would swear that this was in some kind of outlier or some new thing that's happened in the world. That law is actually, that proposed law is actually going to bring us into line.
All right, okay. Just stay there. That line will come back, Sinead. If you can hear me, stay where you are. Joe, you're shaking your head there.
Totally. There's serious concerns. Michael McDowell, a former AG, a man of great legal mind, has serious concerns as a senator now, has serious concerns about this. And she says, we're bringing this into line. I presume she was going to say with the rest of the world, many governments, many people throughout the world have been watching Ireland and are concerned, have expressed concerns about the free speech. It's going to happen.
Yeah, but the international commentators, Joe, have their concerns how it's being framed to them with people with their own agenda as well. You see, I want to have a real open conversation, but I want it to be real and open. Elon Musk had a certain interpretation, if we're going to talk about him, and JFK the same as well. They had a certain framing of this hate speech law, and it's that which they commented on. They didn't comment on they never read it or didn't have any understanding of it. They just saw, right, that group has said this is this, that, and done. And therein again lies part of the problem, Joe.
Well, see, the thing is, just fundamentally, if you ever look at a statue of justice in courthouses, it's Lady Justice standing with a weighing scales holding the balance, and she's blindfolded. Yeah? So everybody comes before the law equal. You are innocent until proven guilty. This law subverts that constitutional reality. You are guilty until proven innocent. That is a flipping of our basic fundamental
but as I say, this still has to be dealt through, and that is an interpretation of it, Joe.
It's not, Greg, because that is the onus will be on the person to prove their innocence, that you did not have this material, if you have it on your WhatsApp, that you didn't have it with a
But it's been made very clear that you could have a racist meme on your phone. It's not a crime. But if you intend to go and distribute that, you don't have to prove that you were never going to go and distribute it.
I think that's Michael McDowell's concern.
Yeah, but that is looking at what really, really could be possible. You don't seriously think any government really actually wants to interpret and enforce the law like that, Joe. I mean, I'm not saying it's facetious, but I mean,
well, Greg, we're having a conversation. I mean, people that I know, that I speak to, are telling me, and I would love your listeners to phone in, do they feel that they can no longer speak in this society? Do they feel that they're being made shut up and being silenced? And I guarantee you, many people will say that to you.
Sinead, can I put that to Sinead too? Sinead, listen, I mean, you've been on the show before, Joe's been on the show before. I think we could all we could all have a pint and a bit of crack, do you know what I mean? We're not all sort of... but... There is a point that we have got to a stage, Sinead, now, though, that if someone has anything even remotely conservative of a point of view, it's hard to get them to come on the radio because they're afraid that they'll be seen as backward or they'll be shot down for it. I'm not on about really extreme views, Sinead. I'm on about something that someone says, you know what, I think we're going just a little bit too far here. And people like that feel they don't have a voice, they're afraid to speak out. We don't want to be in that space either, Sinead, do we?
No, definitely not. but the problem I have here is that, you know, so what is it that's being said that people feel where they're being silenced? And it's usually, to be honest, the people who are saying that they feel silenced.
Right, say for instance, Sinead, I'll give you an exact
I'll
give you an exact example. There are people who say, for instance, on transgenderism, for example, that they are perfectly happy to support and accept anyone who's of 18 years of age to live that life that they want to live, and they will address them as they want to be addressed and they'll respect them, and that's fine. Mm-hmm. But the same people then might be concerned that young teenagers are being taught stuff in that regard. Now, I'm not going down the library's route and the book stuff. I'm not on about any of that, Sinead, but that might be taught stuff that could confuse them, that it's hard for them to deal with, that they don't want their children to be exposed to. But we have a curriculum that is insisting on this being taught to them. But they can't express that view in case they get lumped in with people that are waving certain books in the air and screaming in the face of librarians. Those people don't feel they can speak, Sinead. That are happy that lives as adults, but are concerned of the influence that this type of conversation and narrative might have on their vulnerable children or their impressionable children.
So, and I mean, I have heard people on the radio talking about this, Greg, jeepers. But I have heard people on Highland talking about this.
Yeah, but on Highland it's different, I think.
Yeah, and that's the thing. This is what this space affords. This space affords everybody to say with their piece. Now, you know me, I will 100% disagree, and just anything that's extremist, especially on the right side of things, I'm going no. But there are people who may have genuine concerns, and that is where the conversation needs to happen. But if those people are not having conversations with people who are informed, with people who are experts in the subject, that's where the problem lies.
But the parents are experts in what they think is right for their children too.
Experts in their children.
Yeah,
they are. And I mean, I'm a mother, you know, I'm experts in my children. However, you know, you do also have to listen to the experts. And to be perfectly honest, it's not the kids who have a problem with any of this. It's the older people, people my generation and above.
But you see, Sinead, in terms of experts, I don't want to bring Joe back in yet in a sec. But like, say, for instance, vaping, right? You know, vaping stops you smoking, smoking gives you cancer. But we don't really know, this is probably a terrible example, but we can't say vaping is brilliant because we don't really know what the consequences might be in 5, 10, 15, 20 years' time, right? Now, in terms of the policies that we're employing now as to what we teach our children and how we teach them, yes, that is maybe some experts' view at this time, but we really don't know how that will affect people in years to come. We don't even really have enough information to find out that if someone transitions, for example, what percentage of them it improves their lives or how they might feel at 25, 30, 35 or 40, depending on when they through that. So we can't blindly accept all of the information because no expert could truly know it at this point, Sinead. So we need to be really careful that the decisions we make now, as well-intentioned as they are the right decisions. Because we all love our children and care for them, but we have to be absolutely certain that what we're doing now is right, because the consequences and ramifications for future generations, if we get it wrong now, Sinead, could be massive.
But I mean, teaching something in schools and teaching that this is something that does exist in our world, it's and there are people now to this radio who are transgender and, teaching children about a reality of life is a completely different thing from coercing them into thinking that way or giving them some, kids are presented with a lot of information, a lot. And it doesn't mean to say, kids are taught about the Holocaust. That doesn't mean to say that they go down and they turn into, they're taught a fact. Mm-hmm. And this is a fact of life, that there are transgender people right now in our communities And that this is a fact of life.
Yeah,
it is
sure.
not something that can be brushed under the
but
table.
But we also have to make sure that in that space then, right, so in that space too, we also have to say, right, well, we've talked about lots of different things, but there also is this, a man and woman can get together and they can have children. Do you know what I mean? Like, we have to make sure it covers all bases then, so.
But it does.
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't exclude that just in favour of teaching kids about transgenderism or teaching kids about LGBTQ plus, matters. It doesn't exclude anything.
Yeah.
And the kids don't have a problem with it. It's the parents and the people my age
who seem
to have the problem.
And I think, Sinead, a lot of parents who are very vexed about this, if the truth be told, they should talk to the kids because the kids know all about it. They've got friends of all different types and they get on with it. They've got no issues whatsoever and they wonder what these old people are all going on about because it's just their life and they get it. Right, Sinead, listen.
And I would like just to say, I just want to say, the kids are reading about this on the internet and they're reading God knows what on the internet, Greg.
Yeah.
I would much rather that children were taught the facts as opposed to, you know, the extremes that they can see on the internet. So, we should all aim to make our kids knowledgeable about the world so that they can handle the world when they're adults.
I think
they can handle the world now.
There's a lot of
the entire point of it.
And there's quite a bit of disagreement. There's a lot of agreement too in this this situation. Not from me, but from you and Joe. Sinead, thanks for your time. Great to chat to you.
All right, okay.
And as I say, it's good to hear all sorts. Right, last couple of minutes to you, Joe, because I've completely thrown the agenda out the window now at this point.
Can I just say, Sinead obviously is an articulate lady that's able to express her mind and has no fear. I think there's a silent majority that are afraid. You talked about this before. You know, there are a number of people that haven't the confidence she has. I'm expressing my mind, and I don't necessarily want to be labelled in that, but the point I'm trying to make is, and she hit the nail on the head when she said conversation. Both of us, three of us, should I say, were having a conversation. And what she talked about, for example, the transgender element there, she said, you know, teach them the facts. The kids don't really need to be taught the facts about this because, as you said, they already know this. I have young children. They understand this. They know this. It's the way then it's been taught and it's the agenda that's behind that. And when they get a little gap, the agenda, they make it so wide. And that's the concern parents have. And for example, to be able to talk about, for example, we were on about transgenderism. What impact is this having on young girls, say, in changing rooms and dressing rooms? What impact is this having on women's sport? And maybe women are afraid to...
Yeah, but we'll work, in fairness, though, in terms of the women in sport thing, we're working through that now. We are seeing the fact that, you know, maybe things went a little bit too quick too soon, and we are seeing now new rules and regs being brought in to recognise obvious anomalies and things that don't make sense. And I don't think there are trans people, honestly, running around changing rooms and toilets, harassing people in women's toilets. You go to a toilet in a cubicle. I don't know why there's not cubicles in every toilet, for that matter. Peeing against the wall just seems Neanderthal to me. But anyway, listen, I take your point. Joe, as always, interesting. You've started a conversation. A lot of people are agreeing with you. I don't think I want to live in a country whereby you have what's seen as the government media. I'm not saying that's the case, but you're seen as the government media. And now what you're seeing is you're seeing little shows and podcasts popping up whereby it's only the right or people that get their views. Hey, it's great for advertising revenue, all that, that's fine, but we still need to all share the same space, I think, Joe, and have the conversations in the same place. We might disagree, we might agree, but let's not call each other's names unless someone comes out with something ridiculously offensive, but you know what I mean.
The point is, Greg, and the hard work is trying to get people in the centre and to keep them in the centre. That's where real democracy happens, and that's where the struggle is. And as you point out, you know, going to extremes is a dangerous place. And what will happen, you will see this happen in Ireland. You will see them jump on the immigrant issue. You'll see them jump on other issues as political campaigns go ahead. And they will be divisive. And rather than holding the centre, and again, as I mentioned...
Because we've got this situation, say in Dublin, there are people being, by young white Irish guys, being beaten up in the streets, women being assaulted... Terrible stuff happening. There's awful things happening to children in this country at the moment in terms of how they're care in Kuzla. And yet, and I've no criticism of it, but then you've got other groups of people that are standing outside empty hotels saying, there's men going to come in here and do awful things in the community and to our children. We all need to sort of say, right, it doesn't really matter where you come from or what have you, but we need to actually put children first. We need to put people first. You know, and then you'll have one group will ignore one problem because it suits their agenda, and another group will sort ignore another problem. But we're not getting anywhere. We're not getting anywhere. We're just getting more and more polarized. We're in more echo chambers of our own points of view, and we're coming to oblivious to what's actually happening, whilst talking about what could happen or ignoring what could happen and focusing only on what is happening. It's crazy, Joe. We need to sort of get rid of our apathy and get our heads together and start talking to each other, stop being polarized, and start working through what we want from the best for this country. And don't be afraid or scared into thinking a certain way. Think for yourself.
Well, I think, again, this is back to the present government we have. There is no explanations. They don't have to explain. And as I said to you, we no longer have TDs. We have DTs. They tell us, coming down from the dial, what we're going to get. I mean, on your own show, I've not heard very many government ministers or TDs explaining laws that they're bringing in. They go and they give their 5-minute or 3-minute speech that their speechwriters write for them, and then they go. There's no debate. There's no conversation. And again, I think that's
and
what
public
I'm
accountability
to say.
Too. It's there's a serious problem in this country with how the media engage with the people that are elected, or how they allow themselves to engage, the rules and regs, you know, where we should be able to have proper debate and proper scrutiny of things. I mean, that's the fundamental of democracy. I would have thought that you have conversations, you have debates, you scrutinize things, you hear people's concerns, you answer people's concerns. You know, not line up for a handy 3-minute interview where the questions have been set up in advance. How does that further democracy or information or understanding?
That's what I'm trying to say. This is what we have with the present government. And there's no debate. There's no discussion. There's no accountability. And like what you have in RT.
I don't think it's exclusive to this government, though. I think it's politics. I mean, we'll see what happens if a government changes. But I don't see it.
I don't mean to be political in the sense of meaning Fianna Fáil or Fine Gael. I mean, anybody can be in government, but government, for me, is the people that rule. Remember, not all Fine Gael or Fianna Fáil TDs are in the government. They're supporting the government. The government is the ministers, if you understand. That is what the government is, a very, very small handful of people. That's what I mean by the government, not necessarily all the 160 TDs out, you know, outside that circle. But the thing is then, you know, it's not good enough anymore for people to think our democracy, back to Brent, and we'll end with this, Benjamin Franklin, a republic, madam, if you can keep it. And what my discussion is, I am concerned that our republic is not being kept because we, the people, are not being listened to, and we, the people ourselves, are not taking the responsibilities and duties of democracy onto ourselves. And if it's been reporting a pothole or a sign the right way or asking for the right answers and for the truth from our politicians, all that is part of our duty as voting people of this country. Democracy isn't just once every 5 years.
Yeah, I'm glad. I tell you what, I'm really glad. I'm glad that I am at the end of this rather than starting in it, because I wouldn't like a full career of working in media, in the political setup. I'm glad I'm at the end of it. I wouldn't like to be starting now.
Wow, that's very, very interesting. And again, I just wonder, I mean, a number of our TDs are stepping down, don't want to go again. Like, what is it that's dead in our political careers that people aren't willing to go into this field anymore, in this space anymore? Is it just that you're there just to make up numbers, that you're not there to speak and express your mind? I mean, I know one politician, I'll not say who, fairly well. And in all my years since they've become a politician, I have never heard them express their own mind. They always express political speak. But, and it's a sad way for that individual to have lived their full political life, never having expressed their own mind. What a way to live.
Slánga fáil, Buachaill Mhath.
Slánga fáil.
Okay, take care, Joe. Thanks very much indeed. Dr. Joe Kelly there, 086 6025000, WhatsApp or text, or give us a call on 07491 25000. Thanks for all the feedback to our last conversation. I mean, there's not an awful lot I agree with Joe on. I mean, I fully respect his view. I see where he's coming from. I don't quite see it like he sees it, if the truth be told. But as I say, you know, it's interesting to hear and platform all different points of view. I agree with some and then other things I completely disagree with. But anyway, isn't that what being free-thinking individuals is all about? Anyone who wants to get involved in that conversation, 086 60 25,000, perhaps you feel that he's gone too far. It's something we're going to return to as well, of course. Now, Marie Dorian's founder of Rose and Rainbow's Infertility and Miscarriage Support in Letterkenny and joins us now. Marie, thank you so much for your time this morning.
Hi, Greg. Thanks for having me.
Right. Minister for Health Stephen Donnelly is announcing full public funding for a cycle of IVF for eligible couples from September. This will be the first time in the state that assisted human reproduction treatment is publicly available. There are some caveats in there, but before we get to that, I suppose the fact that we have a scheme now that gives eligible couples at least one round of IVF, it's been a long time coming, I would imagine it feels like, Marie.
Absolutely, Greg. Absolutely an amazing day for the country. And I think within our community, we just want to share so much gratitude. It's absolutely... Within... today marks the...
Unfortunately,
Marie,
that hello? The phone line's going to pop. Can I disconnect you? Could you hang up, Marie, and allow us to call you straight back again, if that's okay, please? Because it's an important conversation and one which I want everyone to be able to hear Marie's views on. So, Caroline, can you bang Marie through again? I totally agree with Joe. It's very difficult to express certain views in our world today. Joe is wise beyond his years. Well done. The woke will never be happy. The government knows this and keeps recruiting them to push the latest agenda. The North Pole will soon be the South Pole. But you see, then one's calling group of people the far right, and the other's calling them the woke. And it really turns me off. Why are the people who complain about being silenced always on the national radio, TV and social media shouting about it? It's a pretty good point. Marie, are you back with me?
Yeah, I'm here now, Greg.
Okay,
thanks.
Lovely stuff. So you were saying there, I think, about how this is such an important day, and I think you were going to reference some timeline in the past there.
Yes, so today actually is the birth of the first IVF baby in 1978, so it's a really special day for everyone today in our community, and it's fantastic, especially for people starting out on the road. It's going to take a lot of financially just on that first round, maybe, or if they've gone through one round already and looking at their second, it's going to be a big, big help.
Yeah. What about the BMI ceiling and the age 41? Can you understand why that's in there? Is that a problem or is that something that needs looking at?
Well, I suppose with every scheme there is going to be clauses, but I just did a quick poll this morning, so from 19 people that voted, straight away, three qualified from it from what they've seen this morning, and three are unsure.
Okay. Marie, can I come back to you when we've about a line? Because it's an important issue. Yes. We've covered it a lot over the years. And I think when there has been such a breakthrough, I would love a proper chat with you. So Caroline might arrange that with you, Marie. We might get you on a landline or something. But we get your view that it's a monumental day. And thank you, Marie. But I want to come back to you when we've about a line. That's Marie Dorian there. And as I say, it is something we will return to. Greg, we know that this government is rotten to the core. Look what they've done to our unborn children, abortion, the murder of our future carers. But that's not how some people see it either. And that's, again, incredibly strong emotive language. And it's your language, and that's fine. I've just read it. Joe's 100% right. If you speak out, you're cancelled by a campaign to promote a certain view. Again, like, who's cancelled? To you know, like, I mean, we've a lot of speakers in this country, like I'm thinking Pat O'Bean, for example. You know, he has a lot of views that align to maybe a lot of views that Joe might have, and he's on this show. And in fairness, he gets a national platform. I'm trying to think of other groups that have similar views, more conservative groups that there are out there. I mean, now that I'm struggling for an example, it might sound like I'm losing the argument. But do you know what I mean? Like, there are strong voices out there with a more conservative tone to them that aren't being silenced, that they do have a platform. I think it suits some people to say that, oh, if you speak out, you're... But, I mean, there are some platforms where you can still have a debate and a conversation. Agreed with Joe, you cannot speak anymore about anything or you're labelled. I agree 100%, but then again, you see some people who agree with Joe are labelling people who disagree with Joe woke, and there we go. You know, I'd love if we could move away from that. Not me and you or the listener and me. I'm not trying to tell you how to speak or how to text in. I hope you understand what I'm saying. I'm about us as a society. I agree 100% with Dr. Joe. I'm so glad someone's allowed to voice what he has just said. If some well less known person said what he said, they'd be vilified. Thank God someone can see clearly what's going on with our politicians and government. Mary Doherty there. You say that, but we had a lady on last week who had quite strong conservative views. She was a concerned parent. She wasn't vilified. We didn't get a load of messages in or no comments on social media saying get that woman off the radio or anything like that there. She had her say, and I hope she felt respected in her view. And as I say, some people agreed, some people disagreed. It'd be boring if we all agreed, wouldn't it? Okay, back shortly. Helen Martin is Chief Executive of the Charities Regulator. Good morning to you, Helen.
Good morning, Greg.
Thanks so much for joining us. Just can I flip the coverage a wee bit on its head and say that, you know, we've got a massive amount of charities in this country. Donegal is the fourth highest number of charities in Ireland, and most of them are doing great work and fully compliant. Is that a fair statement?
Absolutely, Greg. Absolutely. And we would always, you know, say that. And even to the extent where there is non-compliance, we're always saying, you know, that you have to remember that it's a very small number in the overall context of the number of charities that there are in Ireland.
But it is a sector, of course, that needs regulation, and it's important and we have that. And you get representations from members of the public, I presume, over the course of the year with their concerns. So that's really what some of the findings are. It's reflecting that and the investigations that follow.
Yeah, so we issued our annual report today, Greg, and in that we've covered a number of areas of our work, just letting people know what happened during 2022. So in that, you know, one of the good things that we saw is that charities are engaging with the Charities Governance Code. It's how you run your charity well, and we're really heartened to see the level of engagement by the sector with that. It's really, really important. And then also we cover the concerns, these be complaints about charities that we call concerns that we get in from the public during the year. So in total, we would have got you know, over 600 concerns would have been raised with us. But it's important to remember, A, that's in the context of 11,500 charities, but also not all of those would relate to registered charities in Ireland. They relate to other organisations that people may have thought were
like GoFundMe, other crowdfunding platforms that people believe are charitable organisations but aren't. Am I correct?
Yeah, that actually came out in our survey there that we issued the report there in May, Greg. And actually, yeah, it was interesting to see what people thought were charities, such as commercial funding platforms online. No, they're commercial entities. They're definitely not charities. Similarly, sporting bodies in Ireland are not charities, so they wouldn't be covered by the charities regulator's remit.
So if your local club was running a fundraising draw and you thought that, you know, they've raised 100 grand on the bingo jackpot's 1,000, it's a disgrace. That's not a charity. You can that's not a charity as such.
Exactly. That's a matter for the organisation themselves, and they wouldn't be regulated by the charities regulator. But I mean, we would get concerns raised with us that do fall within our remit, that do relate to charities. But what I would say about that, Greg, is that you know, we publish a compliance report every year where we talk about the number of statutory actions that we've taken, whether it's a statutory direction to provide information or it's appointing inspectors, etc. And you know, 98% of cases where we're engaging with charities, the charities will engage with us voluntarily, and they want to be in compliance, and they will, you know, we will work with them to bring them into compliance, see what the issue is. So it is a very small number where we'll be forced to take our statutory to enforce it through use of our statutory powers. So I think that's a positive story for the sector itself, because there is that willingness once it's brought to their attention that something may not be going right, or they may not be following best practice. And most charities, the vast majority, are very happy to ensure that they rectify that.
It seems that when we start talking about governance standards, it starts becoming a wee bit concerning. But I think a lot of these problems could be resolved if a lot of the charities, which are probably, you know, a small group of people, got their paperwork together on time.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, there's how the charities is run, and we've got that governance code that I mentioned there, which sets out basic standards of governance, you know, how you run it well. And most charities absolutely engage with that. And they found that a really useful tool. And we've got a lot of supporting materials for charities who have any difficulties in that area. You know, things like how do you do minutes for your meetings? The big thing I'd say to charities is to make sure that your trustees, they're the people who take on the biggest responsibility in charities. And there are volunteers. So they're the people sitting on your local committee board, or your, if it's a company, the board of directors. And what's absolutely essential is that they know what's going on in their charity from the perspective of the finances, and to make sure that everything that is collected, whether it's money or donations in goods, that everything is going to the organisation's charitable purpose and helping the people that they were set up to help.
Is there any appetite or scope to bring the likes of these crowdfunding organisations or businesses under some umbrella or other? Because if I was in the charity sector, I would be concerned about sort of maybe, you know, the toxic influence on the good work that's done. You know, there's quite a lot of grifting going on at the moment for different reasons, and people might go, what's going on there? Where's that money going? You know yourself, is there any conversation about sort of trying to make it a fair and level playing field in terms of seeking money from the public for causes?
Well, I'm not aware of any specific proposals in relation to that, Greg, but what I would say is that we have a lot, and particularly during 2022 and into this year as well, we have our initiatives where we're out there telling the public to please make sure that if you are donating or you intend to donate to a charity, to make sure that the entity is in fact a registered charity.
And there is a register for that.
There's a publicly available register of charities, and you can find it at checkacharity.ie. So what we say to everybody is to click check and then give. So what it's about, Greg, is making sure that if you're going to give your hard-earned cash or your donations of goods, you know, in a plastic bag at a door or whatever, to make sure that you're it's going where you intend it to go, and that it is a registered charity, and it's really easy to check that.
Anything else of note that you think is important that we know?
Yeah, I think you would have seen there that we were disappointed at the drop in compliance rates with the charity's annual report. So this is a really basic form that consists of financial information and activities that a charity engaged in the previous financial year. And the level of compliance rates are falling in that. So we're working with charity groups and different trustees and stakeholders to see what the reason for that is. But I would say to charities, it's really important that you submit that form and that you submit it on time. We have a compliance and enforcement program in place at the moment, and charities will be removed from the register if they are not submitting their annual reports. It's really important for the public that they have transparency in relation to the finances of charities that they are supporting.
Yeah, okay. 59% of charities filing an annual report on their finances and activities. It's much lower than you might want. But in fairness,
that's on time, Greg, I should say.
Yeah, okay.
Because you have to do it within 10 months of your financial year end. By the end of the year, we'd over 70% of charities filing the annual report, albeit that it was late. Yeah. But that's still not high enough. We need all charities, a very basic compliance requirement. So what I'd say to people, particularly if you're a trustee, and if you're a charity trustee, you know, we've over 75,000 of them in Ireland. They take on considerable responsibilities. They do amazing work. So what I would say to those charity trustees is, you know, checkacharity.ie, hop on and check your own charity's entry on the register and make sure that you are compliant.
Helen, thank you for your time.
Thanks, Greg.
My curiosity as to what actually is behind you, I'm not going to put you in a position, but I just want to know.
I wish this is the office I wish I had, Greg.
I just want to see how it compares. It's like that advert where they're afraid to show their kitchen in the background that was running through lockdown.
Well, all that's behind me is my office.
I'm jesting. It just looks so beautiful. Okay, listen, Helen, thanks for your time. Have a lovely day. Okay. Helen Martin there, who's the chief executive of the Charities Regulator, with a beautiful background there on the video call. 086 60 25,000. Another really busy morning on the texts and phone lines. Thank you so much for that. We'll get to a few of those before we end the show. So let's take this break. Okay, just a reminder for you, if you're out and about in the Fannad area, or more generally, just to keep an eye out for Greg King, who's missing. He's from Galway. For those of you watching the stream, he's pictured here. But if you're not, obviously, if you're listening on the radio, where the absolute majority of you are, check out our website or our social media. We heard from his partner earlier on. They're all very distressed, looking to get him home. So there's an image of him there. He's quite recognisable, I hope. And we really hope to get them reunited safely. That's the wish, isn't it? Fingers crossed. Dr. Joe Kelly's 100%. He's definitely hitting the mark on what's happening in this country, according to one listener. Another, there's no government here. There is a dictatorship that comes in from Andy. I think, Andy, we have to be really careful when we bandy the word dictatorship around. I don't know how many of us would actually really like to live in the, you know, the actual reality of a dictatorship, but I take your point. Good man, Joe. How refreshing. His voice should be heard nationally. Hi, Greg. Would agree with Joe 100%. The silly Irish just sit back and take everything. There's a new law every month now in Ireland, and we just sit back. Was the same with COVID. We believed everything this government said. My three children can't wait to get out of this country. We're all finished big time. Well, they're going to be going to another country that took all the same actions during COVID, and their government's pretty much run the same, but I take your point. Greg, Dr. Joe epitomises the saying, the arrogance of the white middle-aged Western man. Another, in the last election, Sinn Féin and Fianna Fáil got the most votes, and that's the government that should have been in power if we had true democracy. The Green Party weren't given a mandate by the people to be in government. That was given to them by Micheál Martin for his own selfish ambition to be a half-in, half-out Taoiseach. But we have proportional representation, and those are the rules under which we vote. So, Greg, Joe was mentioning the Constitution. The Constitution is now overrun by Europe. Dr. Joe Kelly for Taoiseach. We need politicians like him to sort out our country and stand up to Europe. Greg, Joe's talking for us. I only wish we had TDs like him. We're being sold out to Europe. But listen, anyone, the one thing about a democracy, anyone can stand for election. But, you know, then do people come out and go, right, OK, I actually really want to change. I'll vote this way or other. A woman was assaulted in Temple Bar yesterday. Another man was attacked on Java Street last night. Strange that RTE isn't mentioning it. Surely our national broadcaster isn't being gagged from broadcasting bad news. I heard both those stories on RTE, so I'm not really quite sure what you mean by that. Not every assault is reported either, by the way, it should be said. Depends how serious they are and so on and so forth. I don't see them there. We definitely got notification of it here, though. So, I don't know what the story is. I mean, you might be tracking, actually, by the way, the story of a case involving a Donegal person, a 55-year-old man. He's been jailed for 10 and a half years for raping his daughter when she was a child. This is just coming to us now. The judge in the case praised the dignity and courage of 22-year-old Karen Harkin from Buncrana, who waived her anonymity to allow her father, Michael Carter, to be named. He was found guilty last month of one count of rape and 25 sample counts of sexual assault when his daughter was aged between 9 and 12. The court heard Carter does not accept the jury's verdict. Judge Karen O'Connor said it was a massive breach of trust and sentenced Carter to 11 years with the final 6 months suspended. That's just news coming to us from the courts there. OK, thank you very much for all of you taking part in the show today, who listened to the show, watched the show, texting, whether you did or not, however you did. It's just great to have you all on board. I want to thank Caroline and Niamh for their hard work on the programme as always. John Breslin's coming up around the Northwest very, very shortly, but we're going to take a break for the news. For me, Greg and the team, have a fantastic Tuesday. Talk to you on what's going to be a wet Wednesday, by the way. If you're going anywhere tomorrow, bring your brolly.